studies and some other analyses. I don't think it was taken very seriously within the community, but then I wasn't around at that time. I don't remember it being talked about a lot when I got there in 88. It was sort of off the horizon by then.
Charles both said that you were aware of studies that other agencies, some of you were aware of studies or research that other agencies were carrying out. Do you have a plan on that? Well, tell us anything about studies that you think other agencies were carrying out.
I don't know a lot of the specifics of the studies. I was friends with Kathy Marantello. She was with the CIA at the time. So I'm aware that they were doing research. But I'm not really familiar with exactly what they were doing.
Actually, the automation study that I mentioned earlier was funded out of the CIA. And I think that might have been the last study that particular group funded. There were actually several groups from the CIA that funded probably stuff, some shorter rather than some longer. I think that the Raskin group did some work for them as well. FBI, I know that Podlesny had written a report on screening. It's classified, I never saw it. That would have been 91-ish. I don't even know the title of it. So I wasn't accessed into that, but I know that he had spent a long time working on that, years. On that report. NSA funded a lot of studies at one time. Mike Crow at Jacksonville State University in Alabama did a bunch of those, looking at validity of the relevant and irrelevant test. Some of them were done out of Doug Grimsley's lab at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, on the validity of the relevant and irrelevant test. Those are the ones I can recall off the top of my head.
And were they open literature?
Yeah, they were open literature, but were never published and had very limited distribution. I have copies of some of them.
Why were they not published?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I have no idea. I just don't know.
Charles?
Hello. Who do you think, with the other person arguing, who do you think has the most extensive library of polygraph research material? In terms of, for example, Charles, here obviously this is your major area of research, and there are other people for whom this is the case who would be motivated as scientists to collect as much information, files of studies, etc. as possible. You have the best. The best is wrong word. You have the most comprehensive collection, or is it the case that it can be even possible to answer my question?
I think mine's pretty good. I doubt that it's the best. David Raskin at one time had a very good library. I tell you, he probably has the best single, in terms of individuals, the best single library would be Gordon Marlin. Gordon Marlin has been a literature collector his entire career, and his personal files are immense. Anytime when I was at Doc, I needed to see an article, I just went to Gordon, and he had a copy of it, because he's been a collector. In terms of institutions, NSA, I suspect, has one of everything. How you'd ever get access to them, I don't know. But Norman Ainslie, I know when he ran that program, was just a voracious collector of literature. And, you know, he worked, he and Frank Horvath and Gordon had published bibliographies that were just enormous, including newspaper clippings. I mean, Norm had newspaper clippings from obscure local newspapers, places Castle Herald, which is a town with 600 people in it. I mean, he had clippings from that. How he got them, I have no idea. But of individuals, I would say Gordon Barlow probably has the best. Raskin still has an awful lot. I think maybe Box Up now that he's retired from him. And I have a pretty good collection.
Part of the culture, getting back to kind of scientific culture issues, some of the things we heard might lead a reasonable person to suspect that there are a lot of stakeholders in the polygraph itself. And you know, not to mention just the semantics of that word being associated with professional associations, institutes in the Department of Defense and Autonomy, and elsewhere. At the same time, so stakeholders could be manufacturers of equipment, professional associations, sure, whatever. Recently, since Dad Pine has moved to South Carolina, that we've learned that there are at least some resources, although I don't think the majority of us are, some resources being put into alternative methods or different methods, I think would be the best way to put it. And some scientists might argue that a multi-method framework is the best for the evolution of the ultimate system. Et cetera. And I'm perplexed by we keep looking at 80-year-old measures with 60-year-old technology, et cetera. What was the climate for alternative kinds of techniques, let's say through 95 when you left? Was there any at all?
What I would do, there were a few things that we were attempting to look at, however, I was doing most of the research. Most of my time while I was there was on the CMP studies and the test studies and those sorts of things. Although they talked about doing some stuff they had an eye movement study that they were going to do at one point, pupillary type of thing, it just never happened. I can only do so much.
I think this is probably time for us to cut off. I propose a 5-minute break and then we'll start again. Before we turn to Andy, who has indicated he's going to be quite brief.
Well, some of my colleagues might argue that that's impossible.
Whatever. I just want to point out that we have a dinner planned, and everyone is invited, yes, and committee and staff. And the reservation is at 6 p.m., so there's a reason for brevity. At Landfall. Landfall is in Woods Hole. And so some people may want to go back, and some people may not want to go back. You may want to walk on the grounds and see the ships, or walk down through the harbor. Maine at Luscombe, Luscombe.
If you go out the way we all came in to turn into the grounds, if you're going to the hotel, you would go left.
but if you continue on the right.
28.
Just pull, you know, out of the driveway here, turn right. Oh. We'll take you right down into, quote, downtown. Take Quistle.
What's an intuition?
Landfall, one word.
Just think of landfill.
I guess it's just one of her.
Parking down there, that secret parking that we don't know about.
Actually, if you turn like north away from the water on some of the side streets, there's metered parking. I think it's over at 6 o'clock.
So by the time we're down there,
and there's a lot also. Landfall at the one side, landfall, and then fishmongers.
But we're early.
Every so often a ferry shows up and you can park up.
Susan, do we need a head count of people coming to the room?
Deborah should be back. She's keeping track of it.
Deborah?
But if you want to, I think she went to copy. If you want to,
there she is. Deborah, do we need a head count for dinner?
No. Actually, I have a reservation for 21. I think we're a little under.
Okay. So.
Everybody's invited to that.
Great. All right. Mr. Ryan.
Does that count against my time?
No.
Well, first off, I have to, those of you that have worked for the government, you know that there's a caveat that has to start every presentation. Basically, what it is we're specifically stated these are my views and not the views of the government. I do not represent the government. I don't know enough about it. From what I've heard today, as well as what I've heard over my past 2.5 years at that time, my view may not reflect the gloom and doom of most of the skeptics. I believe that when science is challenged, answers will be found, or we would have never gotten to the moon, and we would not be breaking the genetic code right now. There is a large literature base in physiology, psychophysiology, and biomedicine quantifying logical features with deception. It has been said the uniqueness of this data presents special problems in signal detection and analysis. It probably goes without saying that all examiners and federal programs do not readily accept the introduction of computerized algorithms into polygraph. This reluctance to relinquish some element of control over professional conduct is experienced by most professions as they transcend into the digital world. Some examiners may have even feared that computers might replace the need for their services. Others embrace the change within the name of progress and welcome this new potential. One of the first efforts to develop an algorithm for use in the federal polygraph programs was the DOD contract that you've heard about today with the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory. The stated objective of that contract was to develop an algorithm that could discriminate between deceptive and truthful polygraph cases in a given data set. The goal was to improve examiner expertise by providing every level of competency with the same adjunct information in hopes of reducing scoring errors. Interestingly, in much the same fashion as the profession itself, PolyScore evolved from expert knowledge acquired from practitioners, not unlike some of the other professions represented in this room. Critical need for a generalization to the field. However, close to a decade of development now brings PolyScore not only up to par with our field examiners and experts, but in line with other algorithms in use in the United States. Additionally, program managers are recognizing the value of its decision capabilities and field use for crossing, supporting opinions, and quality assurance. DIPAC continues to support the development of PolyScore and other algorithms seeking the best method available for accomplishing the stated task of discriminate between the physiological signatures of deceptive persons from those who are non-deceptive. In fact, DIPAC continues to invest in the development of other algorithms using very dissimilar approaches to signal analysis. We expect to continue our search for the best solutions available for our programs. Our goals are simple. We need algorithms that work in a variety of circumstances, and that must maximize our decision process, which is discriminatory outcome. We also recognize that our needs may change as we discover additional source data. Newer techniques appropriate to the data will be utilized. Unfortunately, DIPAC cannot accomplish this task alone, and in fact should not be expected to do so. We invite all interested parties to join us in this endeavor. Our vision remains to be a world-class research facility in the field of credibility assessment, to include the detection of deception, and to chart the course for future detection and deception methods. In fact, our new generation of examiners are sons and daughters of a digital age. Unlike their predecessors, these examiners are not satisfied with limited information in their decision-making processes, nor are they accepting of the facts just because it is stated. This new breed is hungry for data and are more comfortable with complex processes than competencies as professional examiners. They not only expect the technology to assist, but they ask, why does it work and how does it work and what if conditions change? We will accommodate their needs with our expansion of sensing technologies, as well as our continued focus on their interpersonal skills. We will continue in our quest moving from data orientation to information orientation, combining physiological data, examiner expertise, and the future data that we will collect as well. These examiners, in my opinion, are part of a new revolution. In every revolution, there's a time where the innovators, and especially the practitioners, are anxious about philosophical shifts. In PDD, we are experiencing this time of change, and now stand ready to charge forward with our new tools, algorithms, and others, as part of the accepted battery of techniques available to each examiner. In my personal communications with agency program managers, they are excited for the new examiners and maybe even envious of what lies ahead. The program managers are seeing more efficiency and increased productivity by utilizing the algorithms as part of their overall process, including quality assurance. Many of us as doctoral candidates, medical students, and practitioners may have feared and even resisted technological change in our respective professions. However, we survived the predictions of our skeptics and are now asking, what's next? I predict that PDD examiners will take a similar journey and will pressure the scientific community to provide them with their what's next. Moreover, I am certain of our success. I think one of the probably most clearly represented issues today, as well as the previous meetings, is just an extreme dearth of research in this area. I don't know the answers to a lot of the research, other than say it has not been mixed. And I would ask, where are the proposals in terms of, it's easy to find the problem. I think it's more important to find the solutions. A glance into the history of all successful professions and disciplines reveals fascinating timelines of progress. Progress never comes without difficulties and controversies, however. In many instances, this timeline is spattered with significant periods of change, as well as individuals who recognize the need to alter course and have thus been permanently etched into the annals of their respective disciplines. It is also known that many times the solution or action comes from outside the parent discipline. I predict the polygraph is in such a time in its evolution, and the only thing that separates us from success is the scientific evolution. If I could be allowed to digress a little bit, I used to take great pleasure in teaching my intro psychology students about the contributions of individuals like Young, James, Pavlov, Thurston, Skinner, Watson, and many others. And I clearly remember that enlightening day spent discussing Freud's contribution to psychology. Many students already exposed to the eccentricities of Freud could not imagine the name so popular today. I only needed to explain how his ideas were contextual and at a time considered revolutionary. The rest, as they say, is history. I had to recall to them my history and systems class, taught to me by Dr. James Appel. He had the audacity to suggest that psychology may date back as far as the Greek philosophers. At that time, I thought this was an attempt to claim the reputations of significant persons for the sake of enhancing the image of psychology. I soon learned from Dr. Appel how each individual fit into this developmental puzzle. Some more directly than others, but all contributed to new thought. I also learned how one needed to understand the context of the social element in which the theory was developed, and how each successive theory refines the previous. More importantly, I learned that many disciplines are a unification of contemporary thought, and thus must evolve from diverse fields. Those disciplines that have survived all evolved in this manner and have become stronger through this adaptation process. Like Dr. Appel, I recall the challenge to show young students how each historical figure fit into this evolution and that the individuals who were revolutionaries brought about positive change. As Gary Bernstein wondered at an earlier meeting what might have occurred to Polygraph if Marston and Pavlov had continued their quest together, I wonder who and how we will report the historical elements of the 21st century Polygraph Revolution. How will we relate the contributions of our past to the contributors from the fields of psychophysiology, biomedicine, signal detection, cognitive psychology, industrial organizational and social psychology, and many others? How will the ideas of Marston and Keeler be unified with those of George Miller, Titchener, Spearman, the others that have made history in the past? Is Polygraph following in the footsteps of industrial organizational psychology and the struggle for recognition? Or will it learn from that struggle and move forward with our thinking outside the box? PDD is evolving in front of each of us. We have begun to recognize the disciplines that will join together in refining our theories of this very complex human behavior. We are faced with powerful challenges from our skeptics, but more importantly, we recognize the time for change. Practitioners of the PDD look to sciences to answer questions and resolve complex issues. It is time for science to answer the call. We all remember in 1953, Watson and Crick revealed the DNA structure. It was not until the proper tools, computers in this case, that the genome revolution could begin some 35 years later, with positive results taking 45 years before there was a discovery. In Polygraph, we await the breakthrough that will allow the PDD revolution to explode into the future. Like the genome revolution, the elements exist. We must now seek the proper tools to discover the data under the curve and into the next dimension of our data. The strength of this revolution lies in the willingness of practitioners to carry the crusade into the field with a feverish pitch. Science must focus their efforts on helping examiners fuse the data with other elements of the PDD process. We can no longer rely on physiological data alone to accomplish our task. We must broaden our vision to include all elements of the process and search for alternatives where they are appropriate. The objective is clear. We need to provide more confidence in the process to our fellow employees whose loyalty keeps our nation strong. Our goal is complex and sensitive. We must balance the rights of individuals with the national security interests of our nation. And our increasingly global mission only makes this task more challenging. We must lead the way with new discoveries and the application of less invasive, more sensitive technologies and more robust analysis of whatever the data might be. I'm personally encouraged almost daily by examiners and new scientists who come on board, who come to me with a spark in their eyes and revolutionary thoughts on how to discover the truth. I'm excited to be a part of this revolution. In closing, I guess you noticed I'm reading. Most times our debate of Polygraph have ended with some level of confusion on both sides. The work is to make direct and indirect diagnosis, and sometimes the old is still reliable. It also directs diagnostic investigations in much the same way that Polygraph results do. At times, some may find that the mere thought of being Polygraph is intrusive and personally invasive. Yet there are times when we rely on Polygraph to save our beliefs and man's integrity. It's times like these when I am reminded of the struggles of the Welsh society in the 1500s. The Welsh believed that in order for people to be rewarded with an afterlife, they must be relieved of their sins on earth. In every community, there was an individual who was called upon following the death of a member of the community for a ritualistic meal with the dead. This individual would perform a task that was vital to the external survival of the deceased and to the culture. The task was simple and necessary, but when the task was complete, the sin eater was no longer needed and would be cast into the nearby woods with no recognition of his contribution until the next time he was needed. As the pendulum of morality swings from time to time, we will always need to know that sin eaters are there whenever we need them. Let us not cast the sin eater into the dark shadows in the interim times. Let us learn to use the strengths of their commitments. And finally, I praise all who have participated in this study. It's been an exciting year. I look forward to more excitement. The willingness of everyone to be open, to be candid, and to be very passionate clearly speaks to the desires of each of us to discover the truth. In my opinion, one of the great accomplishments of this particular study is truly the objectivity of the committee and the comprehensiveness used to seek solutions. I look forward to the finding of the committee with great excitement. Thank all of you. Is that brief enough?
Can I pose a question to you, the committee, and all of our guests that's related but separate from your statement, so maybe you can even think about the answer. Say something in public about it, given the constraints. Almost every academy committee I have ever had an association with or panel, and there are a large number now, over 25 years, I guess, at this point, always has some section of their report that calls for new research, and even on occasion recommends its funding. They don't all
come with checks.
And we've talked about that issue for ours, and we're not anywhere near writing a section of our, we're not writing our report yet, but we're not clearly writing that section. On the other hand, we have talked with you, with each of the agency groups, with a variety of constituencies about the need for a comprehensive research program, not just on polygraphs as they are known today, but on the set of issues that have spurred concerns about their use for screening and the national security needs. In other areas, and I'll give three examples, there have been these discussions at the Academy and elsewhere, and recommendations for how funding and research should proceed. So the three areas that come to mind quickly to me include environment, and in fact Paul and I have had discussions about this, justice, criminal justice in particular, but also civil justice, and education. And in each of these areas, there have been a whole host of academy committees and pushes for new research and concern about letting the agencies themselves be the sole overseers for that kind of research. And it isn't simply distrust of the people at the agencies, although in every meeting somebody always stands up and says, well, I wouldn't trust them to do the research. But it's differences in culture, and it's the interplay between the applied nature of the implementation in the specific area and the basic research questions that need to be addressed. So let's contact one window gate one thing. There's the specific implementation for polygraph for screening, which you guys and many others in the room have a very serious interest in, a vested interest in, and you have a research program that's targeted at that as well as some other things. Whereas the National Science Foundation and NSF and NIH and other agencies, indeed NIJ, also funded, have been funding other kinds of broader research than the narrowly construed ones with fairly elaborate peer review of both application and results in a variety of settings. And in fact, the problem in education is being posed that they keep on pulling away from that, and there's currently a debate going on about where to target certain research funds, whether they should go at NSF or go in the Department of Education because of exactly these issues, and the people who light up on both sides. So the question I pose to Dogpie and to you, but to everybody else, is what kinds of research programs would we benefit from as a society that somehow could have the targeted interests that clearly reside in the security-related agencies, yet the scientific standards that many of those of us on the committee really try to bring to bear in all of the things we demand and the criteria we put on the table when we judge things? And that's a challenge for us to consider, but I think we would welcome input on how agencies thought about that, and in particular the security agencies, as well as our colleague researchers around
the table. I think there's been, at least in my brief tenure, there's certainly evidence of a shift in terms of a need for more research. I think that if it is recognized that certainly in the screening area that there's almost nothing. I think that's at least one point we've all agreed upon. I think part of your question is it appropriate for BIPOC or any other institution run by the government to handle all of that? And I think the answer really is no one else is interested in doing it, and so the government has taken it on as a task and assigned it to a certain agency. I don't think that there's anybody that I've ever spoken to at any program that would say we don't welcome research from other places, and I think that's evidence now at BIPOC that we have so many different laboratories working on very different issues now. Is it a shift? Is it a change in philosophical thought? I don't know. But I certainly would welcome, probably at this point, the most rapid way to determine who needs to do what research in what areas. And maybe DIPOC and other institutions like us are more capable of doing the very applied, but not the empirical, not the development of a magnet that can go into a big base. Interestingly, I was told that can be done, but I haven't seen it yet. I think if we came together, the scientists who have a long-term interest in that, in this issue, and we brought together a call for proposals and papers, and let's decide where does the strategic plan go? Can we do it for 100 years? What can we develop within 3 to 5 years and implement it into the field? What is long-term and what is short-term? I don't know the answers to these. I know that we get different opinions from everyone. I do think that most people that I talk to now recognize that whether you call it antiquated or not, it is old technology, but we have yet to see a solution for the old technology. And that's part of my concern is it's very easy to be a critic of something that may or may not work. Most people offer suggestions, but they never offer the solution. And we're as anxious for a solution as I think anybody is. And so maybe it's time for a major conference that says, we bring the scientists together and let's decide where is the strategic plan and who conducts the research.
Well, I have a related question on who conducts the research. As you know, you likened it to the Human Genome Project. A lot of money is being spent on the Human Genome Project. Where would the money come from? Some of my best friends are scientists, but it strikes me that if there's a lot of money to be spent on this particular scientific revolution, that more scientists might be interested in coming to your conference. And if you don't have any money, then they might be less interested.
Quite cheap costly.
Let me amplify that. Add another issue to that. It's not clear that there are receptacles out there like Ben said, where I need to be relevant. take this on. And I said, over years, historically, it's been reluctant to get involved in applied issues or in theory for applied issues. Some of us remember a program called RAND, Research Applied to National Needs. Well, Congress got NSF to do that, and I think it lasted about a year, and they didn't spend no money. NIH doesn't sponsor research relative to equipment, or hasn't for years. It's been reluctant. They let Hounsfield develop the CAD scanner in his basement in England and thought that was fine. That was the way equipment like the CAD scanner ought to get developed. It shouldn't benefit from mathematical and other kinds of research that NIH puts. So when you think about how much money you need, think about who's going to be willing to take it even if you had it. It may not be our major basic research institutions.
I feel compelled just to make a couple of comments. In 1985, Polygraph School was an Army school. It was run by a high school graduate, a little white-haired man who had that job for about 30 years, ran it like an iron fist. That school had no more than 12 students at a time, three iterations a year. In 1986, it became .5. In 1986, they ran two classes of 36 students a day. 36 in the daytime, 36 at night, to get caught up, because that was the year of the spy. When Sheila Reid came there, she's a friend of mine, and when he came here, I don't think we were ever friends, but we were friends. What they told you today is true. There were no record keepers. When Jerry Craig and I went through that school, our records were kept on a 3x5 card in a box. We didn't have a computer at that school until 1987. She got one of the first ones. It was not a Pentium, but a 286. And from there, it progressed. Well, when they came to that school, it was an Army mentality. And in the Army, you follow the rules. They came from an academic environment. They came in there with new and fresh ideas, and they met with resistance beyond anything you can imagine. I was there, I saw it. I was chief of instruction when she was there. And I watched. Watch your mouth. So what she's telling you is true from her perspective. From the other side, she was new kid on the block, as was he, as was Barbara. And it's just a story that evolved from there. And it has come a long way in 15 years. Got a long way to go. When they first did that study in 1987, I told Barlin, that what they did is they created a scenario and they made a person sign a document that says, I'm playing a role, and when it's over, I got to give the money back. And then the relevant question was, did you commit espionage against the United States? Not in your wildest dreams did they commit espionage against the United States. The control questions became more relevant to them. And the relevant questions were, and the results were, as I told Barlin, it didn't go to work. And it didn't work. One guy had the $500, hid it in the glove compartment of his car, his wife found it and spent it. And it went downhill from there. That was a comedy of errors beyond belief. But when you ask somebody, is this a bottle of soda? No, this is a bottle of water. And a relevant question's got to stand on its own. The action verb has got to describe the physical act. Did you commit espionage? No. Did you play a role in committing espionage? Yes. And she came along with her little trick, and I thought that was the craziest thing in the world. But test does work. I didn't like it. I don't like it today. I don't like algorithms. But I gave him the data to create one for tests. I was the one to give him those tests. And I told him, I'll back it up. If it works, we'll use it. But I forbid in my program to have an algorithm installed on any computer I have. Because up till now, they didn't work. But I didn't like computerized polygraphs either. I was the last guy the FBI to go computerized, because I was holding out. I liked the analogs. But now we're computerized. You've been to my facility. You know what we got. I only ask you to understand how it got to where it is today, and there's so far to go, and boy, if we ever got an opportunity to create a way to do it better, this is it. And I urge you to keep that in mind. I can't comment on what she said. That's not fair. I don't want to say anything or what he said. I know they believe that. I saw a different side of it. You heard me speak before. I only urge you to think about research. Is there a way to do this better? Tell us. Because if anybody's receptive for it, we are. I told Secretary Richardson to 2 weeks before he retired, when he said, what do you think about the National Academies of Science doing this? I said, I think it's great. You ought to even pay them twice the amount you're paying and do some research. Do some research on what polygraph is today, not what it used to be. But we don't do what it used to be. I'm sorry to get on my soapbox, but I had to say that.
Probably a good time to end here. And with that, we have 45 minutes available. I thank everybody who came. Tomorrow is closed session, and the committee will be in closed session. We are meeting here. Can we leave stuff here?
Sure. We can leave the tent part instead of just like at our other facilities, but take anything out. I would
take responsibility.
We have to take
the tent.
Are they
going
okay? Yeah.
And then if we did, I don't know if we'd leave our people. Don't leave the computer.
No, I just
no.
I can't talk.
I know about it.